Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Kerry Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Hey there, good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Only on News Talk Radio WOKV. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato, John Dineen's in studio this evening as well. So we've got a full house ready for 2 hours. I got in here early today and they flipped on NFL Network. And I don't think they talked about anything other than the Patriots trading Randy Moss to the Vikings. I think if you ask them, that was the only story in the National Football League today. And granted, it's a star player, though he's in his 13th year, to a team that's desperate to have it. Your take on Randy Moss a month into the season, going back to where it all began?
I think it's going to be interesting because you got Brett Favre and Randy Moss, you know, kind of marrying for, I guess Brett Favre wanted him in Green Bay years ago. So it's going to be interesting, but I was kind of like you, and then I got tired of hearing about it. You know, I went to the gym this morning working out, and ESPN is just, I mean, Randy Moss, Randy Moss, Randy Moss. And then and I'm going, Marshawn Lynch, what about him? What about him? I saw a little blurb about it, and you almost didn't even get that information, right, which is, you know, relative to what we've got this week.
I mean, at 4 o'clock today, I turned to the Northeast and dropped to my knees. They're the best. What a skin job this is.
Yeah,
I mean, this is criminal. I mean,
Third-round pick.
Well, fourth round, right?
Third-round pick.
Was it a third round?
They should be locked up for this one. You know, and the Vikings should be taken out back and shot.
This is almost
unfair what they're doing to their fan base.
They now have, in 2011, what is basically a double draft.
I heard that. 2 picks in every round.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a 41-year-old quarterback throwing to a 33-year-old deep receiver who can't get deep anymore.
Who wants more money?
Right. And something I said to you before we went on the air, he'll play 17 games this year. So you know that's going to be an issue. Hey, I want an extra game check. He's going to complain about that somewhere along the line. He's not going to Minnesota in a good frame of mind to begin with. And Minnesota was the scene of all his transgressions. Oh, you know,
remember the lady cop in the car?
Yeah,
yeah.
What, he hit her with the car, knocked her in a
hood. Yeah, he just kept pushing her kind of up the street.
Yeah. So I mean, this is, but you know, of course, what this is all about. They're trying to get a stadium in Minneapolis. The Vikings are, and they believe that they have to win a Super Bowl to get that stadium. And this goes to Jacksonville here a little bit now, this whole situation, because if they were to, let's say they completely lay an egg, 6-10, and of course there's no Super Bowl, and let's not forget that I think they have a $750 million debt service, which means there's only
about the value of the franchise, right about that.
Not in Los Angeles.
Yeah, true.
See what I mean? They feel, from what I understand, they believe that they have to win the Super Bowl this year to get the stadium they need, to get the favorable vote they need to get a stadium in Minneapolis, or the franchise is gone.
Well, they're all in. I mean, trading for Randy Moss with Brett Favre, 41, they're all in. Every chip is in the pot.
You know, it would be a lot of fun to play on that team, though. I mean, with all of that pressure.
Yeah, you know, it would.
Mean, Jared Allen and the Williams boys and Brett Favre and Randy Moss and Adrian Peterson. That would be an absolute ball.
You've got a quarterback, though, that I don't think he can get the ball to Moss.
Oh, he can. But you know what's going to happen?
He doesn't throw a very good deep ball anymore.
I got a bad feeling about Brett Favre having a record year of interceptions because he's trying to force the ball deep to Randy Moss.
He's just going to chuck it down the field, isn't he?
Yeah.
The Vikings are
desperate is not the right word.
Yeah, they're beyond desperate. They have the potential to really come out of this looking like fools.
Or to do something magical. You never know.
I think magical was the chance they had last year. They were there. They were there. They had the ball, and Favre threw the interception, and that was it.
Now, the flip side is, does Randy Moss still deserve any attention down the field from the safety? And if he does, what does that do for Adrian Peterson? Because you know he is seeing he's in the box.
He still deserves attention down the field. He's still, you know, the premier deep threat, probably with Andre Johnson in the National Football League. But it's going to take a lot of pressure off of Peterson without a doubt. So it's going to be fun to watch how teams approach it now that they've got Randy Moss in the fold. But I really believe that it will pull the safety out of the box and it'll make Peterson that much better.
How about the Patriots and the move to make and what it says to Tom Brady and how Tom Brady reacts to the whole thing? I mean,
no, Brady's smart. He gets it. He understands. His best years were with Tony Brown and David Givens as his wide receivers. I mean, they were guys, nothing more than guys. He hasn't won a Super Bowl with Moss. He hasn't won a Super Bowl since they started assigning a premium to the wide receiver position. When he had Givens and Brown and who was the other guy? There was the third guy was a real street guy.
Well, he had Deion Branch for a number of years as well.
Yeah, they traded him for a first-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How do they get lucky
they
like this? How do they keep getting picks for over-the-hill, overrated football players? Why can't other teams do it? Is there a magic, a mystique that is attached to the Patriots?
I don't think Randy is over the hill or overrated, but you're talking about a player on a one-year deal. That, to me, is where the real value that Bill Belichick got in that is because he got a third-round pick for a guy that has a contract that he's not happy with that is only good for 1 year. And I think that is a mistake by the Vikings to trade a third-round pick for a guy you're only going to have possibly for 1 year.
Yeah, they're not going to have the franchise for more than a year unless they – if they win it all, it won't matter what they do in the years after this year because this is truly – you know, I called it save the whale here.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly save the whale. I mean, they've got to save the franchise. They're going to you-know-where in a handbasket.
You know, I had someone explain to me the other day, someone that was in Minnesota for an NFL meeting, and it was 7 or 8 years ago, and that the Vikings were actually actively negotiating with the University of Minnesota to do a Steelers deal.
They blew it.
How did they blow it? I didn't realize they were that close with the University of Minnesota.
Basically the state of Minnesota told the University of Minnesota told the Vikings, look, now we got X number of dollars for a football stadium. We don't have enough for two stadiums. You guys got to get together on this. And they used the Steeler Pitt model, which is a great model. I mean, the Pitt built a training facility that the Steelers share with them. And then, of course, the Steelers built a stadium that they share with Pitt. So, I mean, you know, it works. And, by the way, the University of Minnesota is it's not in downtown Minnesota, but it is a block away from downtown. It's right in the back door. We used to stay, when I was covering the Steelers, we stayed at a hotel that was right between the campus and downtown, and you could go out the back door of the hotel and be on campus almost. And if you look at the stadium, if you look at the new stadium they did at Minnesota, University of Minnesota, it's almost a carbon copy of Heinz Field, but with bench seats. I mean, it's got the open end. It's very, very attractive, but it doesn't have the club section. It doesn't. So they needed to get the Vikings in on this. Vikings, we've got to have our own stadium.
Should have done it.
Absolutely, they should have done it. They were afraid if we build this on campus, then we can't do the beer stuff.
Right.
All right? And the University of Minnesota wouldn't go off campus. And they couldn't get it done. And it's a terrible mistake. I think it's going to cost the city their team. And by the way, for those of you who aren't old enough to remember this, the Los Angeles Lakers used to be Minneapolis Lakers.
George Mikan.
And it would have made sense for the university to agree to do it off campus because they would have had more money coming in from the premium luxury seats and in the boxes and all that.
They've been playing off campus.
They should have been on board, too.
They played the
Absolutely. You're right. I mean, you can't expect the state to put out $800 million for two football stadiums 10 blocks apart.
No, well, not after building a new baseball stadium.
Not as taxpayer. It would have been better for the taxpayers that way.
Absolutely. They had to come to an agreement on this.
I'm not even sure Super Bowl guarantees it for them.
I agree with
Remember,
you.
They built Target Field for the Twins.
And the NFL, by the way, is really adamant, really desperate about having a team in that market. They want to get a team into Los Angeles and block the Vikings from going there. They are desperate to not let happen what happened with the Rams moving to St. Louis.
Why does that make sense, though? Doesn't it make more sense to do what happened with Cleveland and Baltimore, and once the team leaves, the town becomes desperate to have it, and then you get the leverage that you want?
It cost the league $350 million to build him a stadium.
Yeah, but if they say, we're not building you a stadium now, and they don't win the Super Bowl, and you block them, and they can't leave, then the situation just gets worse, doesn't it?
Well, my information is that the league is desperate to block them, to make sure they get a team into Los Angeles before they want to get a team in there and block the Vikings. You know, you've been in that market.
Oh, yeah.
That's a top 12, 13 market.
It's a great market.
It's a fabulous market, and they want to maintain that Packers, Vikings, Lions, Bears, you know, black and blue division.
Oh, I understand why they'd want to
dynamic.
Do it. I totally understand why they'd want to do it. What I don't understand is if they do it, how they get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only question that I have.
You know, that Minneapolis is, it's just underneath Winnipeg.
It's a fabulous place.
It's
I mean, some people would say it snows too much, but hey, you've got family around the corner from there. North
they
Dakota.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a great
they
place.
They absolutely love it
By the
there.
Way, the people from Minnesota would never live anywhere else.
No.
They love the snow. They love the ice.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they do. Ice fishing is a national pastime for them up there.
It is.
All right, we'll take a break. More to come. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Lagerman. We'll get to the Jaguars now. Jonathan Eve reminding us it's Jaguars this week, not Vikings this week. But it's the big news of the day in the National Football League. Randy Moss, once again, a Viking.
That relates directly to here. Don't brush that one off. The Vikings are an important ingredient in the Jaguars' future.
Because
if they were to flee there and go to Los Angeles.
Just like Cleveland and Baltimore.
We're safe.
For a while.
It's long enough for me.
Yeah, well, you know, you got the situation in Southern California also where, I mean, they don't appear to be any closer, do they, to breaking ground on their stadium?
No, but as soon as Roski gets, according to him, as soon as he gets a team that is willing to make that commitment, then he'll break ground.
Okay. Is the league willing to wait?
Do you buy that?
Well, the league wants to see the money, all right? But if the Vikings get so desperate and with their debt service, they're not even going to care. Just get us there and get us the money. I mean, they got to start a Modell, what they did in Baltimore. He didn't, you know, there was no stadium building.
Now explain to people what you mean by debt service.
They owe $750 million is what I've been told.
They had to borrow $30 million
to pay salaries.
To pay Jared Allen, to pay his signing bonus. So they borrowed a lot of money over the last couple of years.
Oh, well, what's worse than that? The guy in Arizona skinned him wool for $50 million.
Who?
The con man from Arizona, he was going to become part owner.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
I forgot about that.
And he was sending bank statements from a P.O. box. He was sending information on him, you know, on for instance, like on bank letterhead. You know, from a P.O. box that he created, and Wolf, he accepted it all as, above board. You know, it was all validated. Okay, yeah, this guy's legit. It wasn't legit. It was a con. And he shouldered a loan for $50 million.
Ouch.
So they've got major debt issues. In fact, right now, the debt and the value are about the same. So they owe on the banknotes what the franchise is worth.
That's not a good thing to have.
No.
Wasn't it a loan he shouldered?
Yeah. And it's why the pressure is so intense on those guys. And it's why they were willing to wait on Brett, give him the money.
Hey, Vic, the league can try to block them all they want. They can't block them.
No, they can't. The only way you block them is get a team in there ahead of them. Man, that's the only way.
Nobody would beat them there.
That's the way I see it.
Not with $750 million in debt.
There's only one way. And then we'll get off this.
Right.
As we said, they got to win the Super Bowl. In fact, Brad Childress, you know, just said pretty much said that
to the
players.
Yeah.
He said, we got a one-year window here.
Most of you won't be here next year.
Yeah.
You better be giving it all on Sunday afternoon. It's a very interesting dynamic.
So you said it's a fun situation.
I think it would be
You're
a ball.
Right. This is intriguing.
I think it would be a ball.
Hey, this is a soap opera.
Yeah.
There's no question.
By the way, Monday night was going to be fun anyway because it's Brett against the Jets,
mm-hmm.
right? The Jets are the sexy team anyway. Monday night football against the Vikings. Now
you put Randy Moss back with the Vikings against Darrelle Revis for the second time in the first 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Holy cow, is Monday Night Football. The ratings are going to be through the roof.
They will be.
It will be off the charts
they
fun.
They will be.
All right. So here we go. Jaguars this week now, at least for the next 3 or 4 minutes until we break for news at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to join us on the program this evening, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. And the Jaguars go to Buffalo this week. And I laid it out to the coach last night on his show that they're going into the same situation they were in last week, essentially. They're going to a Buffalo team that has not won, that's desperate, with a fan base that's grumbling and unhappy. And they're going into their bye week. So I didn't call it dangerous, but I said it certainly is interesting that that's where you're headed this week.
Every game is dangerous, and all those things that you mentioned make it dangerous, and that's legitimate. I mean, it's the National Football League, and any team, and I don't care what team it is capable of beating any team. Now, with that said, watching the Buffalo tape, they're not playing very well. And I believe that the only way that the Jaguars could lose this game, and it's a possibility, is if they turn the ball over a bunch. Buffalo is playing that poorly. They've got a new coach. They've got a new system on offense. They got a new quarterback because their old one is here now. Defensively, they've changed schemes. They are struggling. And the worst sign for them is that they're struggling to stop the run. The Jets ran it down their throat.
Yeah. They have a 10-minute, more than 10-minute time of possession disadvantage from their opponents. Their opponents have held the ball for 35 minutes, and they've held it for 25 minutes, roughly.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, you can't win like that. You cannot have the ball for 10 minutes less than your opponent and have any chance of winning. And that's why you want to watch those offensive stats. For instance, that rushing stat, which I think they're 16th in rushing.
Yes.
They're actually 6th in rush yards per attempt. The reason they're 16th is there's not enough plays to get any higher. Their running game is pretty good.
Well, the running game is good because you could make the argument, and I believe that this is the case, is that they have been behind so early that the teams know they have to pass to get back in the
right.
game, so they're not playing run defense. So their run stats are inflated because they've been getting hammered early.
Well, you say inflated. They're only getting 106 a game.
I know.
He means they've been worsened.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bottom line is they don't have enough rush attempts to really get a read on their running game.
No,
they are.
They don't have enough rush attempts, and then when they do rush it, their yards per carry, I think, is pretty decent. Mm-hmm. It's respectable, but that's because the teams aren't playing them as a run-stopping style.
Okay, so here's how you lose to them. If you don't move the ball, if you're not scoring points, then you allow them to be patient with their running game, get away from their passing game, and now you got a problem.
Can't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm, that too.
That's the real key to this whole game.
So you're saying,
and you know what, this game is very important to this team because if you win this game, you're coming back home for a Monday night game
against the division
for the next home game to follow up what may have been one of the greatest atmospheres in Jaguars regular season history. What we had Sunday.
You have icing
that
on the cake.
That was incredible.
It's icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You have a chance to really make a scene for Monday Night Football.
Yeah, so, I mean, this game has a lot of importance because you beat Indianapolis at home in a big win. If you lose in Buffalo, certainly it would take away from that victory against Indianapolis, but it would dim or dampen the atmosphere for a Monday Night game that could be fantastic.
Yeah, we really are in the midst of a kind of high point in the season, in a defining kind of point in the season very early.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that win, I know it's early, really early, but that win on Sunday could turn out to be the defining game of the season for this team, because if it catapults them, if it launches them up to, you know, into something good, then it's the game.
Right.
They did it. And if they never reach another height, then that's the game. I mean, so what we saw Sunday was really, really special. And as Jeff says, it has a chance to, if they can follow that up, to really send this team on a high.
All right, let's break. News now. At the bottom of the hour, we'll continue with your calls, questions, comments. Jaguars this week just getting started on a Wednesday. It feels like falling. Beautiful weather. And it's going to be great in Buffalo.
Yep.
We'll send it to the news folks at News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Rolling right along, let's grab some calls as we break out of the news here at the bottom of the hour. And we'll start with Lee in San Marco. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to throw a few more tidbits out about the Patriots that maybe you guys could comment on. You know, first of all, Bill Belichick deserves to be on America's Most Wanted for grand larceny. I looked at their roster. I count 16 players on their roster in their first, second, or third year who are getting significant playing time, and not on special teams, on offense and defense. 16 first, second, and third-year players. The other thing that I look at, too, is, you know, Logan Mankins is still hanging out there somewhere and wherever, and my suspicion is that he's going to be traded and that they'll get more draft picks. They have Oakland's first. That'll be probably a top 10, maybe a top 5 pick. They have Carolina's second. That'll be top of the second
absolutely.
Round. They have Minnesota's third and Denver's fourth.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, Brady is Brady. When he's not having to force the ball downfield 3-4 times a game, just keep Randy Moss happy.
Okay, now you're absolutely right. They've done a fantastic job. Now, here's the fly in the ointment. They haven't drafted very well in a long time. I can open up their drafts and start reading names, and you would be stunned at how poorly they've drafted. That's the fly in the ointment here. You are talking about someone who has wheeled and dealed, and I don't know that this is necessarily all Belichick, because he does have he's always had astute personnel people, but his astute personnel people, which began with Bobby Greer. He's the guy that drafted Brady. He's the guy that, you know, that brought in that hall of talent that Teddy Bruschi, et cetera, that allowed them, Will Fork and Richard Seymour, you know, to go to the Super Bowl level. But I don't know who the guy is now because they've lost, what's his name, most recently?
Pioli,
Scott Pioli. I don't know who the guy is now, but they're just not drafting well. And I'll
then
get...
they lost the Thomas Dimitroff, who's in Atlanta now.
Yeah, and they're just... I mean, I'll get the book out and I'll start reading the names, but they haven't drafted well since before the Mankins draft.
You know what's wild, though, is that they could still get Randy Moss back next year.
In free agency.
Yeah. So you could get Minnesota's third-round pick next year and still have Randy Moss.
He's the best, isn't he?
That's pretty good. That's beyond good. That's really good.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's grab Chris in Lakeland next. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Brief comment before my question. Vic mentioned and asked Vic that if somebody's going to play him in a movie, that maybe it should be Robert De Niro or Al Pacino
yeah.
or Robert Duvall.
Yeah,
I think he really should consider Joe Pesci. But
that's good.
But I was watching the game in a sports bar in St. Petersburg on Sunday, and I missed the fourth quarter, so I then had to listen to the rebroadcast on the website. But the volume was down in the sports bar, so I had to listen to the OKV broadcast on the NFL site. And let me tell you, the crowd was so loud I could not hear you when things were actually going on. I never heard if you all commented on why it seemed to me that Indianapolis was really able to run up the middle on Sunday, and I just hoped you could offer some opinion about what was going on in the middle of the defensive line there.
I mean, look, when you play the Colts, you're not worried about runs up the middle. You're worried about Peyton Manning.
Right.
And
they ran for 58 yards. That's
there, there could have been better plays by the run defense at key moments, but, hey, look, in that game, you got to stop 18, you got to stop 87, 44. Those are the guys you worry about. So the running attack of the Colts is not what was going to lose you the football game.
And they only had 58 yards. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't but I mean, there were some key plays, though, in those runs that they did have. But
they were softened up because of Manning and Clark. And
that's right. And hey, as far as game plan goes, I mean, that was a fantastic game plan, and it was a courageous one. It was a fantastic one on offense because I thought that they had a quarterback who, and I don't know if that game plan would have necessarily been that way if David hadn't struggled for 2 weeks. Would you have been so run heavy? Maybe not. Maybe so. I don't know. But David's situation and the matchup gave you the perfect game plan to face them. Defensively, I thought they were courageous. They left David Jones out one-on-one at times against Reggie Wayne. And David, yeah, Reggie Wayne had a record-setting day, but think of a play that really broke their back. I mean, it didn't happen.
He didn't score.
No. So I thought it was a great job by the coaching staff. In our pregame TV show, my X Factor was coaching. And I thought it was a wonderful job of coaching against the Colts.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. 355-NFL-1. Let's move along. Rob is in Orange Park. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. First call this year. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a comment with regards to Minnesota. I know you guys want to move on, but I couldn't agree with you more about how that story is a big deal to us here. And I knew that the Chargers and Vikings were both a year or two from being able to walk away from their stadium deals with little or no penalty, but I had no idea that the debt situation there was such a huge factor. And we've got a lot of tickets to sell for this Monday night are coming up still, and we can really start changing perception nationally if this TV, if this TV broadcast is able to go forward and then playing well, hopefully, maybe moving that game on 4-2 and be able to close out the season on a real high note with other teams really struggling with their stadium situations. And thanks so very much for taking my call.
Yeah, and you make a good point, Rob. The Indianapolis game, in fact, they're rebroadcasting the Jaguars against the Colts tonight on NFL Replay at 9:15. Is that right, Joe? And so people way up around the country will be able to see the not only how loud the stadium was, but how many people were there. And then here you go and you beat Buffalo. There will be no problem selling tickets to that Monday night game. And this town can show the rest of the nation, hey, look at us and listen to this. I think it's going to be an exciting game.
Appreciate
you
got
to get this one.
Yeah. Buffalo's very important to that equation. You had something you wanted to get to.
Yeah, just tie it down here. I can only go, this book is only through the 2007 draft. Sorry, the other book is in my office. But this will give you some idea of why the Patriots aren't the Patriots anymore. They're wheeling and dealing. They got the picks, but here's the problem. For instance, in 2004, these were players they drafted: Vince Wilfork, home run; Benjamin Watson, good pick, home run. Let's see. In 2005, Logan Mankins. Listen to this draft: Logan Mankins, Ellis Hobbs, Nick Kayser, Matt Castle. I mean, these are productive drafts. Then watch what happens in 06. Here's another one. 03, Ty Warren, Eugene Wilson, Bethel Johnson, Asante Samuel, Dan Coppin, Tully Bantakane. I mean, that's a productive draft.
Sure.
That's the kind of draft that made them the Super Bowl champion that they were. Now watch what happens in 06. Lawrence Maroney, Chad Jackson, David Thomas, Garrett Mills, they're all busts. First four picks are busts. 07, Brandon Merriweather, that's a hit.
Except he's on the bench right now.
Yeah, he's a hit, but not, a gigantic hit. Right. He's been up and down. Kareem Brown, Clint Oldenburg, Justin Rogers, Mike Richardson, Justice Hairston, Corey Hilliard, Oscar Lua. Where's the players?
Who?
Yeah. You see what I mean? All of a sudden, you're not the Patriots anymore. It's not as simple as we're the Patriots, everything we touch turns to gold. You've got to have people who know who the good players are. They've had Bobby Greer, they've had Scott Pioli. Now I'm not up to speed with what their personnel department is, but frankly, it's not doing a very good job with their drafts, and that's why the Patriots are not dominating as they did.
I was looking at the Buffalo Bills news release, and you look at who they drafted over the last, 6, 7, 8 years.
Hey, they complained about Donahoe. Donahoe outdrafted the way they're now 2-1. I mean, he was putting good players on that team. They didn't appreciate him.
Yep. 355
NFL 1. Hey, when this Jaguars win, Everyone wins. At Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, you'll get a free barbecue pork sandwich with your game day ticket stub on Mondays or Tuesdays after a winning game at all participating Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue restaurants. And, Vic, I think you're supposed to have your own ticket. We're back after this.
They take the garbage out yet?
News Talk Radio WOKV, depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
We'll test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta, only at your local Southern Ford dealers. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week, rolling right up towards the end of hour number one. We'll pause for news and then keep right on going until 8 o'clock. You can join us, 355-6351, 800-355-NFL1, at Jags Voice if you so tweet. And beyond that, here we go. What's on your mind?
You know, I'm expecting to see a few things that are going to be different this week with this football team. I expect to maybe see Austin Lane be active. I think there's a chance that we may see...
Instead of Derek Harvey.
Maybe, yeah. Strong possibility of that. Hopefully we'll see Deji Karim back.
Would it matter?
Yeah, I think...
Would it matter if Harvey is inactive?
It wouldn't matter because the first game, I thought he played pretty well against Denver, against the run, and then since that point, he really has not done much.
Do you have the play-by-play sheet from the last game? Sorry, Jeff.
I think it's over there.
Okay, go ahead.
So, that would be a big deal. I mean, here you have a first-round pick that, you know, you're expecting to be one of the cornerstones of your franchise, and it's not working out.
I apologize. Look here. Look in there. Okay. So he's not working out. And so would you rather, based on what you've seen from Larry Hart, have Larry Hart and look at Austin Lane with Jeremy Mincy?
Well, I mean, Larry Hart, Jeremy Mincy, Austin Lane, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Now, do you cut him? I mean, do you reach that point where you just don't want him on the team?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
You want to hear this?
Yeah.
Guys, he didn't even make the play-by-play.
This past week.
Yeah, so that means that in the past three games, he hasn't even had his name typed into the play-by-play final tackle stats in two of them. In the San Diego game and in the Indianapolis game, he did not register so much as a tackle, so much as anything that would even constitute getting on the sheet. You're a starting defensive end. And in the other game, which was against Philadelphia, he was on the play-by-play sheet for a grand total of one tackle. So in the last three games, he has registered a grand total of one tackle. Now, I got to tell you, if you get in the game, there's a way to jump onto the pile. I mean, they give away tackles like candy kisses, you know? I mean, there's a way to get on this damn sheet.
Did you make it?
I'd make it. I'd jump on the pile. I'd do something.
I will say this. What do you call that? A footnote or asterisk? Well, can't use that because that's only for you to use. But I will say this: those aren't the official stat sheets according to coaches' grades. Those are press box
right.
Stat sheets.
Right. No.
When the coaches
get done with them, everybody gets a tackle.
But I understand what you're saying in that. If he were to be on around a pile, jump on a pile, surely he would end up on a stat sheet somehow, some way. Even if he were missed at one point, he would be given credit for something maybe that he didn't
right.
do later on.
Here's what I'm saying.
He's
what
not
is
productive.
This guy's problem? What in the world could keep a guy with his size, his athletic ability, his expectations, his experience now, the third year?
He's played every game.
He's in the prime of his career. What could possibly, and he's got a great coach, Joe Cullen, a guy who was hired expressly to coach Derek Harvey. It was almost as though they hired a personal trainer for him.
And he had a very good camp.
Yes. What could possibly keep someone in that situation from making the play-by-play sheet in two of the last three games?
Lack of production.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean, how could he be so bad?
Well, talking to the head coach in our pregame interview on Sunday, he said that we need more production out of the left defensive end spot. He said it.
Now, here's
and
Minson.
He said this week that, you know, I don't know his exact words, but he said something to the effect of is that the other guys are going to get more time. Minson's- and that may be mean all the time, and it may mean some of the time. We don't know. We'll see.
Minchie's got a tackle. Minchie's got, and this is in the last
game.
Sack. A sack, a tackle for a loss, a quarterback hurry. All right? Let's see. Let's
Larry
find,
Hart.
Let's find out. Let's. I don't see Larry Hart's name on here, but let's.
Yeah, he was okay.
Let's find another lineman. Campman, two tackles. Another lineman. I'll tell you what, there aren't a lot of linemen on here. They didn't have a great day,
well,
did
no,
they?
Well, no. I mean, the ball's in the air, you know, so. And then when the ball is run, it's, you know, the defense is usually spread out.
But this is a terrible disappointment. You spent $17.5 million on a signing bonus for Derek Harvey. And, you know, and his contract this year, $1.2 million, is guaranteed.
You see, know, I'm not worried about the money. I'm worried about, I mean, this is a guy that's, you know, you need to be productive.
Yeah,
you want him to be productive for your franchise.
You're right. But if I'm the owner, I'm really sensitive about the money because I paid $25 million for Porter, Lemon, and Florence. And by the way, you're going to play against Florence this week. You know, and I paid $17.5 million in signing bonus for Derek Harvey. And the money I gave Reggie Nelson is now gone. And the money I gave Quentin Groves is gone. And I just, there's too much of that. It's why the situation is the way it is. And
I got to give Gene Smith some kudos for something you just mentioned.
Give him a lot of kudos.
And I'm not, you know, GM. Gene is a genius like Vic, but I will say this.
That's a shot.
Right. Gene, you're a freaking genius.
There was I watched about 15 plays of the Oakland Texans game this past weekend, and Quentin Groves was the starting weak side linebacker. It was embarrassing. Folks, it wasn't just a bad game. It was embarrassing.
That makes us all feel better.
No. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Gene got what?
A fifth-round pick back.
Fifth-round pick back or whatever for Quentin Groves? That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it sure is.
After seeing what I saw, oof.
All right, folks, we are due for news here at the top of the hour. Hey, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville location, Stein Mart. More fashion, less price, more Jaguars this week. After news on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Here we go, hour number two now. Sexton, Lagerman, Ketchman, Fortunato, Deneen, we're all here for you. 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Should you choose to join us on the program, how about, go ahead.
Brian, what is the number one question to ask Vic this week? What do you think is the question that's on every Jaguars fan's lips?
What did you think when the coach?
Who did your makeup Monday night?
Take. Did you like it?
Loved it. But folks, if you're missing Ask Vic television version on All Access, you need to check it out.
Got kind of creative.
That was great.
Yeah.
A little shot at Manning, Napoleon, and then, you know, a little comedic relief there with the shade over top of you. Very nice.
How about the chickie behind me, huh?
Yeah, very like nice. Very nice.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. What's that? Anyhow, I'll tell you what it is. Everyone wants to know, are the Jaguars a playoff contender? I mean, they want to know, coming off that win, they want to feel that they saw something that is a symbol of what this season might be. And they want to know, can the Jaguars be a playoff contender? Are they a playoff contender this year? So why don't we go there? And let's talk about the division. It's a really, there's some interesting dynamics in this division. And the number one thing of interest is the fact that the Indianapolis Colts are 0-2, and they're chasing everybody. So let me say this. Not only, basically, they are in last place in the division because they're 0-2 in division games. But, you know, there are six other teams in the AFC with 2-2 records. And they either trail all of them or trail almost all of them because of their poor division record. They are in last place in the tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're really behind the eight ball a quarter of the way into the season. They're down the line, and I think it's a big issue.
They'll be back.
Okay. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the division. Who has the edge? Does Houston really have the edge after a quarter of the way through the season? And let's talk about this. Are the Jaguars a playoff contender, or should we take that win on Sunday with a grain of salt and not use it as a measuring stick of what we think this team can be?
Well, just to address that, the measuring stick is really this week, isn't it? How they respond coming off of a big win?
Good thought.
I mean, do they go on the road and beat a team that they should beat them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even though they had two 25-point losses in a row, they should beat them.
Yeah,
don't we have to wait on that?
Everybody else has.
They shouldn't go up there and give them a seal clubbing, but I think they should win.
Well, but we should expect that they would win.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So if they come off of the win over the Colts and go beat the Bills, well, then maybe that question has more validity.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, let's talk about the division in total, and let's start with the team that's at the top, the Texans. I have not seen them, but I have great admiration for Schaub to Andre Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Owen Daniels is a terrific tight end. Terrific, although they've been getting a lot of the Dreesen kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how good they are, or how, I shouldn't say that, how much better they are than last year when the Jaguars beat them twice, but on offense, at least, they're outstanding.
Well, I got a major game of interest. There are two what I call picture shapers.
Both in Texas this weekend.
In the AFC this week. No, one is Denver-Baltimore, where you got these clashes.
I thought Titans-Dallas might be one of them.
Head-to-head jobs of 2-2 teams or playoff contending type teams. And the other one is Kansas City and Indianapolis. Kansas City 3-0. Hey, what would happen if Kansas City turns out to be for real? What happens if they played? What would happen if they beat the Colts? You know, the Colts would find themselves 2-3, and they got some really tough games coming up. What are your thoughts on Kansas City and Indianapolis, Jeff?
I'm not a believer in Kansas City yet. They just beat San Diego on a rainy Monday night. Yeah, I can't buy in yet.
They won in Cleveland. And then who did they beat? Oh, they beat San Francisco, who hasn't won yet. So I'm not sure. I follow them a little bit because it's my, mm-hmm. you know, it's my hometown, mm-hmm. and I'm not real sold on them yet. I know they're playing better on defense. Derek Johnson, the linebacker, is playing well.
Playing fantastic.
Glenn Dorsey is playing really well for them mm-hmm. right now. They are thrilled with what they're getting from him. I don't know if they've got enough of Tom Bahali can get after it.
Good mm-hmm. player, really good.
So they've got some players on defense, but do they have what it takes?
Do they have the secondary to win?
I don't think so.
If you better have a secondary in the AFC.
They got a great young safety, but he's a rookie, Eric Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they feel like he's made them better this year. But I don't know if they're ready to. I mean, the thing that this team has against the Colts is they have a coaching staff that knows how to play them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've got that in Todd Haley and that. I mean, you've got Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss
on offense. But who's their defensive coordinator now?
It's Romeo Crennel.
Romeo's the DC.
Yep, he's the DC.
Well, he certainly knows how to play the Colts. He beat them plenty when he was with the Patriots.
Well, maybe they do. I don't know. I guess I'm skeptical of them. I haven't seen enough from them to make me believe
Crennel's one of the reasons why I want to keep an eye on that game, because he was the master of the Colts. I mean, he beat them like a drum.
Or was Bill Belichick?
Well, you know, Romeo was on the staff. I mean, he was the defensive coordinator. He got him a head job. Well, so, I mean, he knows how it was done.
They win in Indy. I think they're 1-11 against him since 1995. If they're... Oh, in any
soon to be 1-12.
Right. If they win an Indy, man, they're beyond for
but
real.
But you know what? If something was to happen that the Chiefs won that game, it would be the dawn of a new day in the AFC. You would have upstarts all over the place.
Not going to happen.
How about the other one? Denver and Baltimore.
Interesting. And you know, and here's some thoughts on Kyle Orton.
Love him.
Yeah. You know, let me speak on him for a minute. Josh McDaniels did a great thing. When he made that trade, he did something that he didn't. I don't even think he knew how good that trade was. He pulled in a quarterback. I'm not going to say he's the next Tom Brady, but here's a guy who was ignored much as Tom Brady was in his draft. Was Orton a fifth-round pick?
Yes.
Late-round pick, kind of ignored, slow-footed, you know, can't move. That's what Tom Brady was.
Good arm and very accurate passer. Now, I have some information that he had some rubs with the coaching staff at Purdue, and they weren't all that complimentary of him coming out. You know, and that might have hurt him a little bit. But a good arm and a very, very accurate passer. What did he throw for almost 500 yards against the Titans?
478, I think.
So McDaniels makes this deal, which could have made him, you know, a hot new coach in the AFC. But he blows it by drafting Tebow. Why would you?
Oh, you had to go there, did you?
He drafted Tebow because he didn't think Orton could play. He thought he could play, so he makes the trade, and then he doesn't think he can play, so he drafts another guy in the first round. He was right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
If he sticks with his first instinct and uses that pick to get an offensive lineman, Orton, they traded away his two best receivers, Scheffler and Marshall.
And got a pretty good one in the draft in Demaryius Thomas.
That's right, but he lost his two best receivers. His offensive line is really beat up. And he's really doing it with nothing else. And the running game's kind of evaporated here. He's doing it all himself.
341 and two touchdowns.
341?
341. But he was 35 of 50 now.
How many
attempts against the Titans?
How many did he throw against the Colts, though?
496,
wasn't it? 478 is what the number I was thinking of against the Colts.
I'm not looking there. I just know that he threw for 341 and two scores. And when you normally pass 50 times against Jeff Fisher, and a team that leads the NFL in sacks with 16, not a good thing.
I think he almost threw for 500 yards against the Colts.
I'm going back there right now.
Yeah, it was 478.
Okay.
I remember my notes.
I mean, this guy is, you know, you said it, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to some personnel guys, some scouts, and they're crazy about him.
Yeah, he's got great anticipation, reads defenses very well, commands the offense. I mean, he's got all the kind of the things you look for, with the exception of a cannon arm. And great mobility.
But he's got a good arm, Jeff.
He's got a good arm. Yeah,
I talked to scouts.
Arm.
He's got a good arm.
But not a cannon.
Not a cannon, but he's got a good enough arm.
He was 35 of 50 for 341 and two scores against the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
He was 37 of 57 for 476 and a touchdown against the Colts.
Wow.
Think about that. 107 passes, and he completed 72 of them in 2 weeks. The thing that impressed me, you threw the ball 50 times against the Titans, and you got up to live and tell about it.
Now, I don't think you can do that against the Ravens. I think they'll sack you. I think they'll beat you up. I think they'll intercept you. But
no one has more sacks than the Titans.
You're right. Who knows? Maybe that's a game to watch. I like that game.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Titans. I want to know how good they really are. We'll return. More Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna after this on News Talk Radio. WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Insensitive lot in the studio. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Do you want to get on the mic and say something? Take a shot? The guy you were just talking to?
We had a fellow that called in and didn't like us using the term seal club.
I didn't like it either.
You're the guy who introduced it. We'll just leave it at that.
You know,
Mr.
so I,
Greenpeace
what do we
there.
Have to do? Change the term to a beat down?
I don't know.
Or, you know, beaten down like a redheaded stepchild. Yeah. See which works.
Significant victory.
Bill Prescott would call and be angry with
you. Yeah, he would.
I would say be yourself, Loggy. That's all I can do.
Yeah, I just use Vic's term, so you know the caller can get mad at Vic because that's the term that he always uses.
Everyone is mad at Vic all the time anyway. Does it really matter? All right, let's get off the Colts for a minute, and let's go back to the division. Let's talk about the Tennessee Titans. 2-2.
Accused of dirty play.
Yeah. By Kyle Orton. And by the way, Courtland Finnegan is now saying, why don't you come on back, Kyle?
And Josh McDaniel.
Yeah, that's true. He got involved in the mix, too. So, 4 games into the season, what do you think of the Titans?
I haven't seen them.
I have.
Have you?
They are the same old Titans. They play tough, they play hard, but they are absolutely dead from the neck up or down at quarterback. I mean, they just...
So either Chris Johnson has a great game and carries them.
But, you see, he had the big game in week one. In week two, he had to leave the game. He got beat up.
Steelers shut him down to 34 yards.
He had 34 yards or something like that, and he had to leave the game. They roughed him up. And
he didn't have 100 last week
I think
either.
That got to his head. He hasn't been the same since.
Well, I mean, do you have to really watch the Titans to know what they are?
Oh, no.
They're the same team.
Yeah, they're the same team they've been for the last couple of years, you know. I mean, with the exception of Vince Young as the quarterback. And, you know, after the first week, everybody said, Vince Young. He's developed now. And then,
he's terrible.
And then all of a sudden you hear the things about how Vince Young was late for meetings and then Jeff Fisher criticized him. And, you know, obviously Vince Young has not grown up.
There's a very strong chance that Kerry Collins will be the starter when they come here. I mean, it's deteriorating quickly. Who do they play this week?
They're in Dallas.
Oh, don't say it. I mean, they could get clubbed in Dallas.
Like what?
It could be bad.
You
like
chicken.
What? Like what?
No. They, in today's game, you can't win without a quarterback throwing for a lot of yards. That's just the way it is. And Jeff Fisher is going to have to change his ways. The days of him winning as he had won with Eddie George and that crew, those days are over.
We said it before. Got to get the man.
You got to get the man.
Vince Young is not the man.
Nope.
But they have 16 sacks, and this is after they lose Kyle VandenBosch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're getting something done.
Well, they
on
ought
defense.
To get something done on defensive line. They've drafted defensive line so heavy over the last couple of years. Isn't that all they've drafted?
Yeah, and they
and
lost
even this past year, first round pick, right? The guy from Georgia Tech.
Yeah, but he's on IR this week.
Ah,
he's done for the season.
Really? What
did
he do?
Was it ACL?
You're talking about the defensive end.
Morgan.
Derek Morgan's on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went to the injured reserve list. I believe. I'll check, but I believe it was with an ACL.
Ooh, that hurts.
I didn't know that.
That hurts.
Yeah. If they don't get someone to ride to the rescue at quarterback like a Kerry Collins. I think they will fall by the wayside. I think the Jaguars will pass them. I really believe the Jaguars will pass them if Collins doesn't ride to the rescue. They're not going to win with Vince Young.
Whether they have Kerry Collins or Vince Young, they need to have Chris Johnson. That's what that team is all about.
You're absolutely right, but I'll tell you what, Jeff. I saw it in week two. I watched them play the Steelers, and the Steelers just ignored Vince Young, and they just went after Chris Johnson with everything they had. And I think they showed everybody how you beat the Titans. You stop Chris Johnson. He's, and don't worry about the other guy.
Had 55 or fewer rushing yards in two of the last three games. By the way, it was a torn left ACL, and Derek Morgan is done for the year.
Oof.
So, but they're still getting sacks. They have 16 to lead the AFC. I believe that leads the NFL.
They're getting sacks on defense, and their defense coordinator is losing money.
Yeah. If the Jaguars can find a way to do something with their beleaguered secondary, they've got a chance because I think the rest of their team is starting to make gains. They're clearly making gains on offense. Their defensive line is really starting to become something.
Getting better.
And they've got some guys emerging like a Mincy, Alualu clearly. Hopefully a Larry Harder and Austin Lane will come around. But the secondary is showing no gains at all. I think it actually got worse this past week. And the Derek Cox thing is now starting to become a real issue.
See, and I would say that the safeties, at least, were more productive.
Yeah, the safeties were. Yeah, you know. I'm sorry. I apologize, Gerald and Anthony. Gerald Alexander and Anthony Smith. They played well.
I mean, they're not a long-term deal there. No,
they had big plays.
Okay.
But they gave up some plays. There's a lot of room for improvement there.
A lot. I was just going to ask you if having those two on the field together was a significant improvement. I mean, from a playmaking stage,
yeah,
obviously.
From a playmaking standpoint,
yeah,
but
they
saved
two big plays.
You got to get that level up because they're capable of more. You know,
those two are?
Yeah, way more. The one pass where was it Dallas Clark that was so open?
Yeah, that was Anthony Smith. Yeah, at the end of the ball game on 4th and 10.
Yeah,
that was Anthony Smith.
Oof.
15 catches, 196 yards, Reggie Wayne. You know, you can't have that. I mean, you've got to get somebody who can play that corner. And if it's not Derek Cox, then you got to do something.
You're not going to get it now.
You better do something, or you're going to blow what might be a.
You hearing anything on Derek Cox?
I have heard nothing. Here's what I think it is. This is just my speculation. I think the coach has lost confidence in him. I think the coach wants to see a little more vinegar. I think the coach wants to see a guy with a little more swagger. I hate that term, but he wants to see a guy who has more of a personality of a cornerback, and thinks less and is not as timid and not as has a shorter memory, that kind of thing. I think the coach has lost confidence in Derek Cox more than Derek Cox has lost confidence in himself.
I thought we would see him maybe back out on the field this past week.
Well, basically, Jack said today that David Jones will be the starter again this Sunday. He all but said it. He was asked, and he said probably.
Did you think we would see him because David gave up a huge day to Reggie Wayne, 15 catches?
No, I thought we'd see him on the field this past Sunday.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant this coming.
Yeah, I thought we would see more of a role for him, maybe those two guys rolling in and out, and we didn't see it. But, you know, the one guy that I am impressed with, you know, we are, and everybody's kind of saying, boy, the secondary needs to get better.
Let me guess.
Go ahead.
Middleton?
Yep.
I am too.
He's a good player.
But he's not a corner, is he?
He's a nickel and a special teamer. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the guy plays with great energy. He's a competitor. He can cover. He can cover tight ends. He's quick. He's a nice upgrade. And when I say upgrade now, that's talking about upgrading from Scotty Starks, who was a pretty good player. It's a pretty good comment.
And you got to do something about that corner position. These two guys they're facing on Sunday aren't bums. Lee Evans isn't a bum. He's a good player.
Yeah, but you got to have the man to get him the ball.
I know. That's a problem. Fitzpatrick doesn't have much of an arm. But you know you're not gonna see the Fitzpatricks of the world every week. You're gonna be heading into a run of quarterbacks. You're gonna see Tony Romo.
Matt Schaub is right after that.
Right. You're gonna get Manning again, and so you're gonna be facing quarterbacks. What else?
You got two weeks to get better because you got Fitzpatrick and then Vince Young.
Then you get Matt Castle. Okay. And I'm not sure that rises to the level
of Tony Romo. But it's a step up of those from those two, so it's increasing the level. Right.
Then you get Matt Schaub after the bye.
That's another step up, a big step up.
Probably Jake Delhomme when you see Cleveland.
Middle of the road guy.
All right. Well, then you see.
But I mean, that's Eli Manning. That's a good thing because you know you're going from a CD level quarterback to a B level quarterback, and then eventually to Schaub. You're talking one of the premier quarterbacks, and so. If you could script it for a secondary that needs to get better, this is how you'd like to do that. It's like a heavyweight fighter, you know. He wants to stay undefeated before he goes up against, you know, the man for the championship, right. For the belt.
And then you see Eli Manning perfect. With Hakeem Nicks and Steve Smith. Yeah, you got your work cut out for you, but you're right. It does build the speed. All right, folks, time for news at the bottom of the hour. Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars rewards card. When you purchase at least 10 gallons of Gate gasoline, you'll get $2 in Jag Bucks back. For details, go to Jaguars.com. News is next on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Bueller Swiss watches are the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get your Bueller Swiss at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Robinson Jewelry Company in Fernandina Beach, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, and Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park. We've had a couple of folks hang on the line. Sean is across the river and down south a little bit in Fleming Island. Bring him right up. Hello, Sean.
Hey, guys. Quick question. I was watching the game, and I couldn't help. The color commentary kept saying that the Colts were playing their third-string safety. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, we're going to start testing downfield. And I know Del Rio wanted to get the running game going, but do you think there's some hesitation on letting Garrard open it up?
Sure. I mean, why wouldn't you be hesitant after what you saw against Philadelphia and San Diego? And on top of that, you got hesitancy because of his performance. But then the game plan tells you that you need to keep Peyton Manning off the field and run the football against Colts defense that's not that good at it. Yeah, they, you know, when they're talking about third string safety, they're saying that because Bob Sanders was a starter, and then he tore a bicep. Then Melvin Bullitt was the one who got hurt during the game, and then DeJuan Morgan came in the game, and so he's your third string safety. But the game plan, or the secret game plan, it's not a secret, but the game plan to beat the Colts doesn't include taking shots at a third string safety.
Isn't it interesting that they were so...
Because if you're going to take a shot at a third string safety,
you're letting Freeney Mathis.
You got to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands before the first string defensive ends get there.
Isn't it interesting that they were so conservative on offense and so risky on defense, so aggressive?
They were, and that really surprised me.
And that's kind of an awkward combination because you're taking an offense and you're saying just be good with it, take care of it, grind it up. But on defense, we're coming to get.
Well, it was bold on defense because they didn't play a lot of two deep zone, which is what they used to play against the Colts for a lot of years. But at the same time, you had Austin Colley, no Pierre Garçon. Who was the other one that was missing?
15. Oh.
Gonzalez.
Anthony Gonzalez. So you had two wide receivers out of the game plan. And so I think that had quite a bit to do with that. You know, so, but it was still bold. I mean, mm-hmm. You're still talking about the league's leading receiver in Austin Colley, and you're still talking about Reggie Wayne. Vic, you said it there at the end of the game. They're sending, you know, 6-7 men pressure, and they're not giving any help to David Jones. And people were saying how, boy, he didn't have a good game. He couldn't cover Reggie Wayne. He was all alone now. David Jones was on an island a lot in that
Reggie
game.
Wayne has 7 100-yard games in his last 8 against the Jaguars now.
15 catches. Guys, I can't get that one out of my head. I have to circle that on my play by play if I'm the coach. I mean, I gotta do something at that right cornerback position.
Rasheem played better.
Yeah, he going into the game, Colley had twice as many catches as Wayne, and he held him to 5 catches, I think, something like that. And you can live with that. Clark had some big catches, but he didn't run wild.
Not like he did last December.
Yeah. Wayne's the guy who killed him.
Didn't kill him.
Didn't beat him.
You know, hold on a second here. Now, they had 8 possessions in the game, not counting that kneel down, that one play kneel down. They scored touchdowns on 4 of those 8 possessions, and they probably would have scored 2 more. You had the interception down by the goal line that was the result of the ball being knocked out of the receiver's hands. Mm-hmm. And then you had the careless fumble by Wayne, right?
Was it a fumble or was it stripped?
It was stripped by Anthony Smith.
Yeah, it was a fumble. I mean,
yes, it was a fumble.
What was that, like the 12-yard line?
It was inside
so,
the 15.
So you got some luck here. Now, I mean, they were going in on a couple more, you know, when you got turnovers. I'm sorry. I can't find much about that defensive performance.
You're not drinking the Kool-Aid, huh?
That deserves a pat on the back. I think they got torched. I think they got absolutely torched again in the secondary. And I'm not trying to play coach or personnel man, but I'm looking for fixes if I'm either.
No, there's no doubt that there is still a lot of room for improvement. But just have a little sip.
I drank the Kool-Aid on offense this time last week. I said that they had the ingredients for the offense to carry the defense. And
they did.
And that was the challenge I put on them, and they did it.
Yep, and they did.
And they're going to have to do it this year.
Same game plan on Sunday?
Has to be.
Yeah,
it's a team that doesn't stop the run. I mean, these guys have given up 478 rushing yards the last 2 games.
Yeah, but I think you can. I think you can let David loose a little bit. I mean, it's not a complete. We don't have a quarterback. We can't throw it. I think there's going to be some chances. But yes, I mean, Buffalo's defense did not stop the run in the last 2 weeks. The strength of your team is Maurice Jones-Drew, and the one area that I was not happy with was when Rashad Jennings came in the game. The offense clearly took a step down when he carried the ball. And I expect it not to stay at the same level when Maurice would be on the field, but I expect it not to take such a strong step back.
Well, you know, when we called the game, we thought he was hesitant. Did you see that on the tape?
He was a little hesitant, but the biggest thing is that he's got to believe in the hole. And there were a few instances where he gave up on it. And Maurice is a pounder. he's going to put his shoulders down, drop his pads, and go where the ball's designed to go for the most part. He didn't do that in one play, San Diego. But he's going to stay where it's supposed to go. And Rashad tried to find something really big out in an area that he shouldn't have been looking, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, hey, I've got high expectations for Rashad Jennings. Mm-hmm. I mean, high expectations because I think he is a really good athlete. I think he has the ability to be a really strong number two.
Throw him the ball. Don't give him the ball.
Yeah, but I believe he's got talent to be a runner too. And I expect more out of him.
Did you just see the exchange that happened here in the studio?
No.
Okay. The Phillies just won, and Joe obviously has been glued to the game. Roy Halladay just threw a no-hitter, second no-hitter in postseason history.
Well, what was he jumping around for?
Well, because John Dineen wrote no-hit on the board, and Joe freaked out.
Well, it was over.
Well, there was one more pitch to throw. Superstitious right there. Look at him wearing his Phillies shirt. From what year? Is that 81?
Don't look at me that way because you know what I'm talking about.
Is that 81?
Joe's been drinking a lot of Phillies Kool-Aid.
The shirt. Is that the 81 team? What was it?
80. 80.
I just
hung up on a guy, luckily, because he goes, hey, I just want to tell you something. It's not about football. I said, I know what you're going to say. Don't say it. And he went, it's a perfect game. And I said, and I hung up on him because it's not a perfect game.
Right. Did he walk somebody or was it an error?
He walked two people.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I mean, how many no-hitters were in the league this year? Like five or six?
It's a bunch of them.
Man,
it's because
that bad call at first base. And that was a perfect game.
Yeah, that was a perfect game.
Oh, yeah, that's
now,
right.
Now, how much of that is due? I don't want to talk about this. You can get back to football. But how much of that is due to hitters not taking steroids? The pitchers now have the upper hand.
Well, I think, I mean, I understand what you're saying. It's also hitters don't know how to hit anymore. I mean, they don't know how to work the count. That's why you're seeing this. They don't know how to work the count.
I'm very disappointed in Dineen, right? Because I said, don't do it, and he just went ahead and kept writing it.
You know, Richie Ashburn played for the Phillies.
I don't know what he's got against the Phillies.
You know the old story of Richie Ashburn. He was a master at fouling off pitches to keep, you know, to make the pitcher throw and throw and throw until he got the pitch he wanted. Well, the story was that he was fouling off pitches and down the third baseline, and he hit a guy, you know, with a foul ball, you know, punked him in the head, thunk, knocked the guy out. And then as they were carrying the guy out in the stretcher, he hit him again.
That's good aim.
All right, folks. It's
supposedly a true story.
Supposedly. Let's take our final break of the evening, and as we go, we'll invite you to vote for your favorite MVP teacher to be the Community First Credit Union MVP Teacher of the Week. Your teacher could win club seats to a Jags game. It's all part of First Down Touchdown Teachers. Visit communityfirstfl.org for all the details. One more segment, Jaguars This Week, and we will be complete. After this on News Talk Radio, WOKB. Depend on it. All right, 10, 12 minutes left in the program. If you'd like to join us, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, Jags and Bills. Did we answer the question? We've had a lot of people, you know, drop by the studio or call and not want to talk about what the Jaguars can glean from Trent Edwards. Obviously, that's a sexy little story because he's a quarterback and not a safety.
Hot color, you know, what's their hot color? You know, brown. I mean, that kind of stuff.
They can change that pretty quick.
How do the plays come into the game? How are they relayed? How do they get from the offensive coordinator to the quarterback? Do they go through somebody else? It's simple stuff like that. They like to know for reasons that I don't quite understand. But when I would get calls from, if the Jaguars played the Patriots and the Steelers were playing the Patriots the next week, I'd get a call from a guy up there who would want to know, how do the plays come in? What's Pete Carroll's demeanor like on the sideline? Stuff like that. They want to know stuff as it relates to procedures, to time. They're not looking for a scouting report.
No, they're not. Well, they're not looking for a scouting report on personnel because you can get that off film. Mm-hmm. You know, and this team's played Buffalo how many years in a row?
This would be the fifth or sixth straight year.
Okay,
6, 7, 8, 9. This would be the fifth straight year.
The things that I always, if we had a guy on a team and he was an offensive player, and he knew the offense of a team we were getting ready to play, I'd want to know offensive line checks. I'd want to know how they did that. I'd want to know their hot colors.
Hot color's a big one.
A lot of times a quarterback comes to the line of scrimmage, he'll say, check blue, 321. Mm-hmm. Well, usually in that 321, one of those numbers is going to be your live snap count. I'd want to know which one it is. I'd wait till I get it confirmed, and then you could use it throughout the game. But there's a lot of things that you can get from a quarterback because he knows basically the entire offense. There's a lot you can get from a quarterback.
Well, yeah, and that's why. I mean, we've talked through the years when guys have come in and out of here.
But he doesn't probably know everything. I mean, this is, you know, Chan Gailey's first year.
Right.
You know, so it's a new offense. It's a new system for him. So, but I'm sure he knows enough to be able to give some decent information out.
All right.
And I did go back and I watched some tape of Trent Edwards today.
Okay. Against the Packers and against the Dolphins.
Yes. He's got a real nice, tight release. The only thing I didn't see him throw well, with the exception of one play, was the deep ball.
Well, that was the complaint in Buffalo. Yeah, he wouldn't throw deep.
But his short stuff, man, when the rush is coming, he doesn't have to do anything with his arm. It's just it's out. Really quick release.
Well, I mean, 20 of 25 here 2 years ago.
But I will say this, from watching the tape of Trent Edwards, when he didn't have or when he had got sacked or he was scrambling or whatever, he didn't have a lot open. So for whatever reason that is, Buffalo runs a lot of two- and three-man routes, so there's not a lot of options for the quarterback. They run a lot of deep routes, and so – you've got a great opportunity to get home with the rush because they do run a lot of deep routes. So a lot of it wasn't on him.
He looked great here that game, which was the best game of his career, obviously. He looked great. I loved him. I'm stunned that it didn't work for him in Buffalo. I really believed that he was going to be the long-term answer in Buffalo.
Well, and Chan Gailey has a reputation with quarterbacks.
And that's why I said before the season began, watch them, you know, Gailey, Cordell Stewart, the guy in
I can't think of even who he
is. Oh, yeah, you know, Mike Tomczak, Cordell Stewart, and he had a guy in Dallas he did some work with. I can't remember who it was. I mean, he does good work with quarterbacks and receivers, and I thought he would, you know, reclaim Edwards' career, but it didn't work.
Who did he have in Dallas?
I forget.
Is that Brad Johnson?
Was it Brad Johnson, or did he have the quarterback that was from Georgia?
It was 98-99. Quincy Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
can't remember which one it was.
He would have had Quincy Carter at one point.
He did good work with somebody. I forget who it was. Man. I'll find out. But he's Chan Gailey. You know, he rose to fame on the Three Amigos. He created the Three Amigos.
In Denver.
That was his invention, and he was the wide receivers coach in Denver that put that whole thing together. Ricky Natiel, Vance Johnson.
And Jackson.
Yeah, Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson.
And you know, and that shot his career up. And then his next stop was offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, where he invented the slash role for Cordell Stewart. I mean, so this and then turned him into a Pro Bowl quarterback. Or an AFC title game quarterback, later Pro Bowl quarterback. I mean, he has done in his career a lot with very little.
He's got a long way to go.
He's
in
perfect.
Buffalo.
He's in a perfect spot.
Well, he's got a lot of work to do.
They cut Edwards. They trade Lynch, and now the rumor out there is they're going to trade Lee Evans.
You might as well
trade him and move on.
Oh, you can trade him here
and draft a bunch of guys.
They can trade him to here. I'd be fine with that. I think he's a wonderful player.
Well, that's what they're talking about now. Is that Lee Evans?
You don't like him?
I like
he's
him
on the block next.
What don't you like? You're shaking your head.
I don't like trading for him here.
Well, okay, you're right. I don't want to see them trade away any picks. But if they were to somehow find a way to get him here, that'd be fine with me. You know, if it wasn't too costly. I like
the guy.
This team could use another guy.
Yep, I agree with you. But would he make that big of a difference for them here?
Would he? You don't think so?
Well, it brings to an interesting question. Who's the number one receiver on this team?
Mike Thomas.
I was just about to say that. We spent so much time talking about Mike Sims-Walker, and yet in two of the four games he doesn't even have a catch. And Mike Thomas last week, I think he's your number one guy, isn't he?
He is. He's the best route runner. And the most consistent production.
How about my man?
Your man who?
Taekwon.
Had a nice game.
He's on the rise.
He got his confidence
yep, you've been calling
in catching
that.
because the last couple weeks, remember the one hit him in the chest, bounced right off in Philly.
Against the Eagles, he had that one catch at the end of the game, and that was the first catch of his career.
Kickoff
returns. That's what's changed this guy. He's got him in the game. He feels like he belongs. You know, he deserves a letter now. You know, he's a letterman.
He's looking good. He caught every ball this past game with confidence, and he had two big catches on the most important drive of the game.
Third down and the 22-yarder.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like to see.
So now you just need to be able to go deep to him.
You know what I want to see this week? I want to see Mike Thomas matched up against the Buffalo Bills bump-and-run corner, Drayton Florence. Because if I were an offensive coordinator, I'd want to have Mike Thomas against Drayton Florence. Because he loves to play bump. They almost always keep him in bump. And I think that Mike Sims-Walker would really struggle with that. And I think Mike Thomas could flourish against that type of
cover. Who's their best defensive back, Whitner?
In this game, it will be Drayton Florence.
Mm-hmm. He's their best...
best cover corner.
Mm-hmm.
Their best defensive back,
Bird,
you could say that it's Jarris Bird.
Yeah,
who had
nine
picks last year. Hadn't had one yet.
Can Whitner not play anymore?
I mean, he's a box safety.
Uh-huh.
And what is he? How many interceptions does he have in his career? Three, four?
Yeah, not many.
Something like that. I mean,
he's a big tackle guy.
Yeah, he's a box safety. Mm-hmm. That's okay. What he
13
does.
13 tackles last week. But all their defensive backs.
Well, Bird's a good player. He was a top rookie last year.
The thing that I'm kind of mystified is what happened to Leotis McKelvin?
Yeah, what happened? He was punt returner a whole bit.
Well, the Bills are going to be without McGee this week.
And without Yabody. So they have three corners. They're going to have Florence and McKelvin. McKelvin started last week, and then their third corner is Reggie Corner.
What happened to McKelvin?
He's a backup.
Playing?
He's been playing only a nickel when McGee has been on the field, and he hasn't supplanted Drayton Florence.
Who's their defensive coordinator?
George Edwards.
George Edwards.
Don't know.
Been around the league. Oh, Joel, come on, Vic. He's been around forever. Linebackers coach, eight different places.
He was in San Francisco and Miami.
Been around the block a lot.
He was on George Seifert's coaching staff in San Francisco.
Hmm. Don't know.
May have even gone with him to Carolina to start things out.
George has been in the league 20, 30 years.
Yeah, easy.
Something like
21
that.
21 NFL seasons.
You're not talking about George Stewart.
No, George Edwards.
Okay.
Been around a long time.
Okay.
Now, their offensive coordinator is new to the NFL, I believe. But the offensive coordinator, in reality, is Chan Gailey. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're running this 3-4, 4-3 kind of thing. Is that what the Jaguars tried to do last year when they didn't have enough personnel to run either?
Yeah, they are.
And how does Kyle Williams make the move to the nose?
Well, they're listed on the depth chart as a true 3-4, but they play more like a 4-3 than they do a 3-4 with Kelsey
Kelsey's Campman
as a stand-up defensive end.
What are they doing with is Puzlesny going to play or is he still going to be out?
He's going to play.
Yeah, I didn't see him on the injury report today.
So this will be his first game back?
Yes.
He had 12 tackles and a forced fumble and a fumble recovery.
I thought he played last week. No, I think he played last week.
He had a big game against the Jaguars last year.
The biggest?
Him and Kyle Williams.
Kyle Williams was the one who had a big game.
If you look at the tackles. He had 12 tackles, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery, and that was at crunch time. Those two guys were really tough on the – you know, Maurice Jones-Drew said it best today. Cole was killing him about the Bills being last in the league against the run because Mo said, yeah, they stopped the run, and what Mo was saying is against us.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, they stopped the Jaguars' running game cold last year.
Yeah, Mo had 53 yards rushing, and the year before he had 10 rushes and 10 yards, one touchdown.
We get to see Marcus Stroud.
Playing 3-4 end.
Marcus
Stroud. Didn't we see that in San Diego?
Yeah, you know, but it's like I said, it's really more of a
4-3. You remember that?
That really seems like another lifetime.
Sure does. All right, everybody, have a great night. Talk to you from Buffalo, Ralph Wilson Stadium. 10 o'clock for the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. 1 o'clock kickoff, followed by the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show and the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show.